Hello, and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's topic is programming for weaknesses. So, recently I've been talking to a couple clients, and we were talking about ways in which they could bring up different weaknesses that they had in their physique. So, I'm lucky in the sense that I get to train with a lot of variety of people. So, I do train people in strength-related activities, like powerlifting and strongman. I train people with bodybuilding or aesthetic-based goals, so bodybuilders, fitness figure, bikini, all that lovely stuff, and then everybody in between. So I train a bunch of athletes, regular people trying to just lose weight and look better. So it's kind of a wide variety. So I wanted to present that variety in this podcast. So when we talk about weaknesses, I wanted to talk about not only like strength weakness in the sense of like what weak actually means. But I also want to talk about lagging body parts for bodybuilders, or if somebody wants to increase their muscular and cardiovascular endurance, that could be seen as a weakness for them. So I want to talk about how to program to improve that as well. So those are going to be kind of our three main focuses for the podcast. It's going to be bodybuilding / muscle building. So you don't have to be a bodybuilder, just somebody wanting to build muscle tissue. We'll talk about how to program for that. If you want to increase strength in certain areas, we're going to talk about that. And then muscular and cardiovascular endurance. So let's get into the nitty-gritty details here. And some of this will have numbers behind it, so you can focus on the concepts, or you can actually get out a pen and paper and write some of this stuff down. So it might help. So if we look at bodybuilding and muscle building, one of the first things you want to do when you want to increase a weakness, and this will be more so in regards to something being lagging in size compared to other body parts. So when you talk about a bodybuilder weakness or a muscular weakness in terms of aesthetics, it would be an imbalance. So say somebody has really big quads, but they have no hamstrings, or somebody has really big biceps, but they have no triceps, or they're kind of front heavy. Maybe they have an awesome chest, shoulders, and arms, but they have no back. So kind of missing muscles. What you're going to need to do is to increase the workload volume, increase the volume that you train that muscle. So you're not going to necessarily want to increase weight used, because that doesn't necessarily translate to bigger muscles, it translates to stronger muscles. And often in bodybuilding, if you try to increase weight all the time, your form is just going to go to crap, and you won't be properly connected with those muscles, and you'll just be throwing weight around rather than flexing a muscle against the weight. So that's actually what bodybuilding is you want to flex a muscle against a resistance. You're not trying to just move the weight. You're trying to flex the muscle. So if I'm doing, say, a bicep curl, I'm not just trying to raise the dumbbell from the bottom to the top. I'm trying to flex my bicep. And the dumbbell happens to go from the bottom to the top. So there's a very, very different focus mindset when you do bodybuilding versus, like, say, strength sports like powerlifting. Again, the goal is to flex the muscle against the resistance, not to just move the resistance. So your goal is going to be increasing volume, and you can do that by just simply increasing the frequency, and you want to start with light weights. So if I'm adding in an extra session per week for, say, rear delts, if I want to bring them up as opposed to my front delts, I don't want to start with a million pounds. I want to start with just adding in a little extra frequency and doing so at a light weight. And typically the reason why this is beneficial is our smaller muscles are usually associated with muscles that we can't feel well, and we don't have very good mind-muscle connection. So starting with something light allows you to focus on the quality of what you're doing, and then over the couple weeks you can move back up in heavier, like try to progress in weight or progress in like intensity. But starting at a lighter weight where you can actually learn to feel the movement is a really good base for getting progress over the next couple weeks. So again, you would increase frequency starting with a light weight. And that establishes kind of a new baseline of workload. And then you can progress up in weight. And then once the weight becomes kind of maximal, where anything heavier would make you lose concentration, lose form, then you just increase reps or overall sets. So that's kind of a pattern you can use. There's other examples, but this is a pretty good one for most people. So something you do want to think of, though, is increased frequency for weaknesses. The room for that increase in the frequency of the weaknesses has to come from decreasing the frequency of your strengths. So if you're training optimally right now, you should already be training near your maximal recovery volume, which is how much work you can actually recover from. So adding in more work isn't going to help because you don't have the ability to recover from the more work if you're already maxed out. So if your recovery is already the best you're training at, adding in more is not going to help. That's one of the reasons why people don't see growth results in a muscle when they just add more workload. So they'll say, like, oh, I want to grow my calves. I've been doing my calves every day. Well, no wonder they're not growing. How in the hell is your body supposed to actually grow the tissue? When you're in the gym, you're tearing the tissue down. You have to give your body time to recover. And calves are a low priority muscle to the body. So if you're still doing murderous upper back workouts, monstrous leg workouts, you know, do 2-hour marathon chest workouts, your body's not going to have really any reserves to deal with those calves. So even though you're training them more, you don't have more to recover with. So your body does not have any nutrients left over, doesn't have any ability left over to grow those calves, therefore the calves aren't going to grow. So if you're training a body part more and more and more and it's not growing, that's because you're not bringing other stuff down or you're not increasing your ability to recover. So you can actually increase your frequency of a weak body part and keep everything else the same if you're willing to sleep and eat more. So if you're willing to improve your body's ability to recover. So if you can improve its total recovery ability, you can then add in more work. But if you do not sleep and eat more than your typical, your usual, then you can't add more work than usual and expect it to magically be able to make progress. So that's one of the things people do wrong in bodybuilding. When they want to grow a weakness, they just do a million times more of it, but they don't bring anything else down, and therefore they're actually working over their recovery capacity. Okay, so that's what you want to do. When you want to increase the frequency of your weak body part, you have to bring down the frequency of a strong body part. Now that is very hard for bodybuilders to do. So I did bodybuilding for over 10 years. And if you told me that I had to train something less, I would have told you you're full of shit. So I would have got really angry and said, you're weak-minded. You know, only you know, weak people are going to do less. And I would have done more and more and more. And then, of course, I wouldn't have grown, which I didn't grow. So it wasn't until I calmed down and realized that I am not special and the rules of life do apply to me. And that egos are not good for you. Once I learned those lessons, and it took a long time, then I finally started growing. So you can still be stubborn and maybe in a year or two come back to this podcast and realize I was right today. Or you can just learn your lesson today and not waste the next year or two of your life. So, and I hope that you only waste one or two versus me wasting 10. So I'm a very stubborn person. But that's the idea. So if you want to, say you want to balance out your arms. You have really big biceps but no triceps, or vice versa. So no biceps but big triceps. You have to take away some of the sets from the stronger body part, the bigger body part, and put them towards the smaller, weaker body part. Okay? When you do that, you're going to balance out the physique. Your arm's going to look overall much better, which is actually going to make it look bigger when it's balanced. And then you can go back to training them both like a beast and getting them both to be bigger. Okay. So an example of some type of progression that you might set up for a weak body part is, say in week one, you're going to do 3 sets of 16 reps of that, of an exercise for that body part. So again, if it's rear delts, maybe I'm picking like cable reverse flies or machine reverse flies or dumbbell bent over reverse flies. And I'm going to do 3 sets of 16, but the key is I'm going to leave 2 or 3 reps in reserve. So there's a phrasing you'll sometimes hear is RIR, is reps in reserve. And all that means is I'm going to do 16 where I really could have probably done 18. But I'm going to stop at 16, make sure my quality is really good. Give my body a chance to get used to those extra 3 sets of 16 reps. So that's 48 reps. So you want to give your body a chance to get used to 48 reps of more work than normal. Simply doing 48 more reps of normal, even though you're not going to good form failure, is actually going to get you a result. So that'll get you a little bit of growth. Then week two, you come in and do 3 sets of 16, but this time you're going to go a little heavier and you're going to push to good form failure. So instead of really being able to do 18 or 19, you're actually picking a weight you can really only do 16 with. And then in week three, you're going to do 3 sets of 20, but you're going to use the same weight that you used in week two. Okay, so you're going to use the same weight, but you're going to make it to 20 reps. And you can do this through a technique called rest pause. So once the technique kind of gets shaky around 15 or 16, you would stop, you would take 2 to 3 second breather, and then you try to go a couple more reps. So what this does, in a 3-week wave, you would have gotten your body used to some level of new work. You would have then challenged your body, current body's ability to maximize that work. And then in week 3, you're going to push your current body past what it's currently able to do and get a really good stimulus for growth. So you're still going to grow in weeks 1 and 2, but week 3 is the one where you really, really push for more growth. So that's a quick little example. And then you would simply like repeat that structure again with maybe a new exercise. So maybe weeks 1, 2, 3, you do that with cable reverse flies. Week 4, 5, 6, you do it with machine reverse flies. Week 6, 7, 8, or 7, 8, 9, or whatever it is, you would do with dumbbell reverse flies. And I typically pick, if I'm going to do something like that where I do, like, say, 3 waves, I'm going to pick the lightest exercise as number one. So, say out of those 3 exercises, cable reverse flies is like the weakest one for me, and I can really only use 20 or 30 pounds. I'll do that as my first exercise for 3 weeks. Then maybe for dumbbells, I can go heavier. So I'll do that for weeks 4, 5, 6. And then on a machine reverse fly, since everything's kind of locked in place, you can go super heavy. You'll do that for week 7, 8, 9. So you want to progress your exercise selection from the weakest to the strongest within these 3-week waves. Okay. And you do want to pick a movement that's going to be isolated to what you want to grow. So, for example, if I want rear delts to grow and I pick barbell bent over rows, there's too many other things involved. My rear delts are not going to be maximally taxed. So my biceps and my low back or my upper back and traps, something else is going to give out before my rear delts really do. So you want to pick something that's specifically isolated to what you want to grow. And that's going to help you grow that muscle. So even though I can't, you know, machine reverse fly as much weight as I can barbell bent over row, how much of that weight is actually being transferred to the muscle you want to grow? So in a barbell bent over row, if I can do that for 225 for sets of 10, how much of that 225 is really going to my rear delt? We don't really know, right? But it's divided by a lot of muscles. Whereas if I do a machine reverse fly, all of the weight is going to my rear delt. So that's a better option. Okay, so that is how you program weaknesses for bodybuilding and muscle building. So if a muscle's a little bit behind, you go through everything I just said. I'm not going to review it. Go through everything I just said and make those changes. Now, what about physical strengths? Okay. So if you have a physical weakness that you want to improve, you do need to increase something to get that muscle to get stronger. So typically what you want to increase is weight load onto a specific movement or a specific muscle. So whereas in bodybuilding, we increased volume by adding in extra frequency, then adding in weight, and then adding in reps. If you want physical strength, you have to add weight load to that muscle. So you might not even need to increase the frequency or how many extra sets and reps you're doing. You just need to pick heavier things and more specific things to what you want to grow. So it can be through increased volume, or it can be through actual weight used on a better selected exercise. And that's typically how I do it as a trainer, is instead of giving people more work to do, and again, people are usually training to the best of their schedule allowing, and they're usually training to the best of their recovery ability. So it's better to modify what they're already doing rather than add more work, okay? So, and again, you have to account for recovery, and that's how I do that to account for recovery, is if they can handle more work and recovery from more work, why the hell weren't they doing more work already? So they weren't training optimally then. So if you believe your training is already optimal, then you don't want to be able to add more work. That is not a sign of being stronger or tougher by adding more work, because you should have already been doing the work you could have been doing, okay? So you should already be working to the best of your recovery ability, so therefore it's better for you to modify how you train that muscle in the work you already do. Okay, so let's go through some sets and reps and progressions. So for example, in bodybuilding, we kind of did the sets of 16 with lighter weights with a couple reps left in the tank. Then we did a sets of 16 maxed out. Then we did sets of 20 where you had to use rest pause. An example of a progression in strength is you might do 3 sets of 8 to good form failure of an exercise. Then next week you're going to add weight but do 3 sets of 7. So you're going to give up one rep in a room for you to add more weight to the exercise. Then in week 3 you're going to do 3 sets of 6 reps. So each week you might drop down a rep. It depends on how large the movement is. Some movements, it's better to drop 2 or 3 reps at a time. Some more isolated movements, you can drop 1 rep at a time. So this is just an example. But you allow for more weight. You force the ability to add more weight week by week by week to that movement. And that allows those muscles to have to adapt to a heavier stimulus. So then, if you do like a 3-week wave, for example, and there's multiple lengths of waves. So I'm using 3 because it's quick. But you can do 4-week, 5-week, 6 weeks. You know, some people do chunks of like 8 to 16. I'm not a big fan of like prolonged ones like that. So I usually do either 4 to 8 week waves in my programming because it fits a month structure. But what you want to do is after that first rotation, you would then pick a new exercise variation that still targets what you want to get stronger, but it targets it at a little bit of a different angle. And then you would have a selection of picking something that's either underloaded, the same load, or overloaded. And what this would be is if I went through my first 3 week wave and my joints are kind of annoyed, like maybe my elbow's bugging me due to something I've added, I would want to pick an underloaded variation. So maybe before I was doing, barbell close grip press with band assistance or like slingshot assistance. So you're using a shit ton of weight, like super heavy weight. So instead, what you can do in the next round is just take off the bands or take off the slingshot, and that'll bring the weight load down. You'll still be training to maximum ability, but the weight that you can use maximally goes down. That allows you a little bit less stimulus on the joints, and they can maybe catch up and recover. Whereas maybe you started with something super technical and it was very light, and you got your 3 weeks progression, but you're still feeling fine and totally fresh, you could pick an overloaded exercise, something that allows you to move more weight. So maybe you were doing regular bench pressing, close grip benching for your triceps. Now you can add the slingshot to overload them even more. So you would pick the exercise variance after your initial wave, depending on how your body feels. If it's behind in recovery, you pick an underloaded. If it's about normal, you can pick a normal comparative load exercise. If you feel like there's room to push for harder results, you can pick an overloaded motion. Okay. I warned you this was detailed. So exercise selection for this goal is typically we stick with compound style movements compared to isolative movements, since you want to focus on heavier weight onto the end of the muscle worked. So for example, this morning I had a client who does sumo deadlifts, and his hips are a little on the weaker side. So he can blast the weight off the floor, but as he transitions to driving his hips forward into the bar, there's a little bit of sluggishness and kind of like a shake to the hip muscle. So we need to strengthen those things. So what we decided to do was to use a 2-inch elevation off the floor and do stiff leg deadlifts in his sumo stance. What that did was it took away the leg drive, and it started the movement directly in his hips for his body type. So for him, his limb lengths and his torso length, that 2-inch elevation resulted that he couldn't use any quads, and his hips had to pick up the weight or grab the tension of the weight immediately in the movement. So that's going to help us isolate out those hips and really make them work. But a sumo stance stiff leg deadlift from a 2-inch elevation is actually still a pretty damn heavy movement. You can still move a lot of weight. And we were actually doing it against bands, which made it even more overloaded. So that's an example of something where we stayed with a compound movement to still work his hips rather than trying to like go something light and so super isolated. It may have worked well for bodybuilding, but it wasn't going to work well for strength progression. So that was an example of how we picked that exercise. Okay, so that is strength. That's a quick little rundown. But you want to focus on trying to add more weight to the muscle that you want to grow or the part of the movement that you want to grow. So, for example, in that sumo deadlift, we knew it was when the hips had to transition into being movers. So the knee became the anchor and the hip had to drive inward towards the bar whenever that happened. So initially, when he blasted off the floor, his hip was the kind of the anchor. It was the structure that everything pushed through or went off of. And then as he blasted off the floor, the knee needed to become the anchor, and his hips didn't want to give into that pressure. So that was our isolation, and that was a way for us to get at it, was still with a compound movement. So we needed to add weight to that. So he's going to do sets of 8 today. Next week he's going to do sets of 7 with heavier weight. The following week sets of 6 with heavier weight. You just try to progress it with heavier and heavier weight. And then like we said, you can just switch your exercise variance depending on your recovery level. Now finally, I know we're getting a little long here. The third one, the last one, is cardiovascular and muscular endurance. So if you have a quote-unquote weakness in these abilities, we're going to go through how to correct these. So usually we combine these goals, since the best way to train cardiovascular endurance is to include your muscles. So we've done a podcast in the past about muscle cardio, which is one of the best ways to train your cardiovascular system is to add muscles into the process. And one of the main benefits is it allows you to keep your muscles. It gives your body more purpose to having the muscle. And then also muscles, when used under a long duration, they require oxygen just like the lungs to operate. So if you're doing something for 2 to 3 minutes at a time, your muscles are going to be chewing up oxygen the same way your lungs would. So it actually adds to the oxygen deficit you can create within a certain period of time. So 5 minutes of using your muscles plus your lungs is a hell of a lot more effective than just using your lungs alone. So I only need maybe 5 minutes to train versus using 20 or 30 minutes to get the same effect. So when you add your muscles to cardiovascular style movements, it's going to make the cardiovascular training stimulus greater. And then you're also going to be working on muscular endurance at the same time. So it's kind of a win-win. And also, like we said, that the benefit of that is you don't need as much time under tension to actually make the result you want. So maybe 5 or 10 minutes is enough compared to 20 or 30 minutes. And then also you have less accumulated damage to other areas of the body. So if I have to do an activity for 30 minutes, I'm going to annoy more things. I'm going to annoy my knees, my shoulders, if it's a repetitive motion. Whereas if I can just do it for 5 or 10 minutes, I'm going to have a lot of less annoyance to those other areas that are not intended to be targeted. So by using our muscles along with our lungs, you're going to get muscular endurance. You're also going to reduce the amount of collateral damage and overall annoyance to the body. That's going to allow you to recover better from your training. And if you want, you can actually increase the frequency of your training and get better results even faster. So it's huge benefit. Okay. So typically we add these training components like the exercises or the stimulus at the beginning and the end of the training session. So we're going to do it at the beginning for a shorter duration as to serve as our system warm-up. And then you would go into strength training, then any kind of muscle building, muscle shaping as desired. And then you'd finish with a longer bout of cardiovascular muscular endurance. So you're going to have it at the beginning and the end. So if you have any mobility or movement restoration or movement preparation stuff, that happens before the first initial bout of cardiovascular muscular endurance stuff. So that's typically the workout. Movement prep, cardiovascular endurance warm-up, strength training, muscle building, muscle shaping, and then cardiovascular and muscle endurance cool down. Not really cool down, but finisher. So that's the structure. So typically an example of this might be like in week one, we might do like 6 minutes of like kind of sled sprints as a warm-up, and then maybe 10 minutes at the end we'll flip tires and do bodyweight squat jumps. And that's kind of a good way to finish. And then at week two, each of those activities goes up 2 minutes. So now it's 8 minutes of sled work and 12 minutes of tires and jumps. And then week three, everything goes up an additional 2 minutes. So now it's 10 minutes of sleds and 14 minutes of tire flips and jumps. So you just try to progress in time because that's what you want to get those muscles better at. So if you noticed in strength, like for actual physical strength, we made the muscles lift more weight. That makes sense, right? For bodybuilding, we made the muscles move things for longer duration in heavier weights. That's going to make the muscles bigger. So what you want them to get better at is what you progress them at. Kind of makes sense, right? So, and then again, you could switch exercises after 3 week wave and pick either underloaded, matching, or overloaded exercises depending on your recovery ability. And typically for exercise selection, we use compound multi-muscle, multi-joint movements. So you involve the most muscle tissue possible, which adds that oxygen debt that's created. And typically we use a 1-to-1 or 2-to-1 rest interval. So for every 1 unit of work time, you get 1 to half of that time for rest. So if I was active for a minute, I get 30 seconds to a minute of rest. So typically that's kind of the rate we want to go for. If somebody's deconditioned to where they're not able to do that, then we just do the best they can handle now and progress towards those conditions. So, but that's kind of where your end game or end goal is for that. So, and that's basically a quick breakdown. So you do want to do it that way. If you do those 2-to-1 or 1-to-1 intervals, it makes the cardiovascular training interval-based training rather than steady state, which we know already interval is better. So you get more bang for your buck and you get better results for less time invested. Okay, so this is a very, very quick rundown. I apologize for how condensed this had to be, but you can see how it still took 25 minutes. But this is a breakdown of how to program for weaknesses associated to muscle building, physical strength, and cardiovascular and muscular endurance. Cool. So hopefully that was helpful. Give you guys a little bit of a background. And if you ever want information for training or if you ever want help with your training programming, of course you can reach out to us and we'll be happy to help. So our email is brutalirongym@gmail.com. Okay, so if you like this information, you can find more from us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Brutal Iron Gym. If you like the podcast, please share it. So the more people we help, the happier the world will be. And if you have any questions, feedback, or suggested topics for future podcasts, please let us know. Please reach out to us. The podcast is for you, so we want to know what you want to learn about. And again, our email is brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful. And thank you for listening.